leave you, Hosea was preaching to the northern tribes of Israel at the same time that Isaiah and Micah were preaching to the southern tribes. And there's a tribe in Hosea that will be used over and over repeatedly, and it will be Ephraim. Okay, you'll see that Hosea 5, verse 3. It'll be in there twice. So as we come through and read this about Ephraim, remember that if you talk to Mormon boys, who are elders, but they look kind of young to be elders, if you ask them, ask them what tribe they come from, and they'll always tell you Ephraim. Okay, and so that's all you got to ask them. And then remember as many of these verses you can in Hosea dealing with Ephraim. Probably the best one you want to show them. Remember, Hosea is a contemporary with Isaiah. Show them Isaiah chapter 7, verse 8. A lot of times if you can keep one certain reference in mind about a certain issue, and then if you go to that reference, you should have cross-references other places so you can go further with it. Okay, and that's basically how the reference Bible is laid up or laid out, where usually the first occurrence of a doctrine or a truth, like Isaiah 42, verse 1, is the first time the word elect shows up in the Bible. And so I have comments there about how the Bible defines the term elect. Isaiah 7, verse 8, it says, "For the head of Syria is Damascus, and the head of Damascus is Rezin. And within 65 years shall Ephraim be broken, that it be not a people." Okay, if you have the reference Bible, the date approximately would be around 750 B.C. So if you take that and subtract that, 65 years from Isaiah's prophecy. Remember, Isaiah is a contemporary with Hosea. He said, in 65 years, Ephraim shall not be a people. That's pretty raunchy for the Mormons to pick that tribe, isn't it? When somebody messes with a book, God messes with their brain. And here, of the 12 tribes, can you imagine they pick the one tribe that's going to be broken in 65 years back in 750 B.C.? Okay, now, if you have the reference Bible at the word Ephraim, you have a 2 and a 0, or an O. And then at the O, you got several cross-references going to Hosea. At the 2, you have a footnote, and it says, "Mormons claim to be the descendants of Ephraim, but the tribe of Ephraim is not found in the New Testament or the Latter Days," calling themselves Latter-day Saints. They sometimes abbreviate it LDS. And I've often, when I hear that LDS talking to them, I said, "Did you say LSD? Then that kind of bothers them. No, LDS. I said, "Oh, LSD. Okay, and the further west you go, the more of these people you'll meet. Okay, now in the footnote, the cross-reference, Jeremiah 7:15 is a comment or a statement by Jeremiah, which is 100 years later. Remember that Isaiah said that in 65 years, Ephraim shall be broken, it be not a people. 100 years later, Jeremiah said this in Jeremiah 7, verse 15. He says, "And I will cast you out of my sight as I have," past tense, "cast out all your brethren, even the whole seed of Ephraim." And then all you do is look at the little Mormon boy and smile and say, "Boy, you sure did pick a bad tribe." And the word Ephraim is only found one time in the New Testament. It's a reference to a city, not to a tribe. Revelation chapter 7, verses 4 to 8, gives 12 tribes that are in the tribulation. Ephraim is removed, and Dan is removed. Dan, the Danites was the first tribe that had a priest called a father. Judges chapter 17. So obviously, who would that symbolize? The Catholic Church, okay? And so you got the Danites out and Ephraim out. Joseph is put in. Remember, Ephraim was the child of Joseph. So Joseph is put in to replace Dan. And Levi is put in to replace Ephraim. Either or. Okay, so the two removed are Ephraim and Dan. And two that's put in there to get 12 tribes is Levi and Joseph. Okay, now we're in Hosea 5. Remember, Hosea is a contemporary to Isaiah, and he is preaching to the northern tribes. On some occasions, Ephraim can refer to the northern tribes corporately, but at other occasions, he calls them Israel. Look at Hosea 4:17. It's about where we kind of went through last time when we was doing this. Ephraim has joined to idols. Let him alone. So if you go to the Mormon Tabernacle, you're going to find a conglomerate of idolatry. You're going to find the goat head of Mendes on there. And you're going to find a lot of symbolism that's very similar to Masonic Lodge. Okay, Bill Sneblin will give you a lot of that information. Bill Sneblin did some taping. We have two videos called The God Makers. God Makers 1, God Makers 2. And it's interesting to hear Bill Sneblin's take on that when they did some of the filming for that. And I forget one of the main guys that was involved with that, but they'd come across the young man who said that he was taken down into the tunnels. He went down in these underground tunnels below the Mormon temple. They went down through a grate. And he said that they took him back in this room where they were doing some strange sacrifices. And so he somehow got a hold of this fellow who was trying to do this video, and he described him where they went, what they saw, and just told him where the grate was. And so in that God Makers 2 film, I think they have the video footage of the grate where this young fellow was taken down into, secret tunnels. Bill Sneblin said that when they were under the Mormon temple, down in the tunnels, there's underground tunnels that go from there clear to Area 51. Okay, but when he was down there, his wife saw a couple reptilians, but even at that, that's something to think about. And the reason why he moved up so quickly through Mormonism, remember he was a former Roman Catholic priest, old Roman Catholic priest, a witch, a Satanist, a Mason. And the reason why he moved up so quick in the Mormon church is because he knew the handshakes and he knew all that was going on and they knew what he knew. Okay, and so that's why Ephraim has joined idols. Hosea 4, verse 17. Okay, chapter 5, verse 1. Hear ye this, O priest, and hearken, ye house of Israel, and give ye ear, O house of the king. Okay, two questions to always ask yourself when you're reading your Bible is who's talking and to whom is he talking? So we know Hosea is doing the talking and he is focusing this chapter to the priest, the Jewish priest, and the 10 northern tribes, the house of Israel, and the king. Okay, the king, the specific king at this time. He says, for judgment is toward you. So God's judgment is going to be raining down on them. Judgment begins at the house of God. Notice that the priests are listed first. Judgment begins at the house of God. Okay, and these priests, when they are apostates, apostasy breeds apathy in the church, and the apathy in the church breeds anarchy in the nation. Anarchy in the nation will be symbolized by the court structures, the court system that's totally out of whack. Okay, they spell the word justice, or they define the word justice meaning just us.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, and our judge down in Rensselaer actually said that. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's the guy I just filed a case in his court, so we'll see how he does with it. Okay, and so you got to know the rules. You got to make these guys enforce the rules, and the rules are there. The rules are good. The court rules are good, and the court cases would be very easy if the boogers would just obey the rules. It'd really make it really easy, but of course you got to make them obey the rules by citing them, and of course these guys are professionals. When you go and I go in there with our little experience, they hoodwink you every time you go in. You always learn something going in there. Usually it's a bloody nose. Okay, but you just keep going at it. Okay, so judgment there. So when corruption is in the priest, that leads to corruption that's in the courts. That's just automatic way that works. Okay, it says, for judgment is towards you because ye have been a snare on Mizpah and a net spread upon Tabor. And the revolters are profound to make slaughter. Though I have been a rebuker of them all. Okay, the revolters are the ones running the court systems. Okay, doctrinally, this slaughter will be a literal slaughter, verse 2, where it says the word slaughter. I have the cross references all running to James 5, showing that in the tribulation, the courtroom setting, that's where the rich will get their wealth by fraud. If you would look in James 5, verse 4. When you look at James doctrinally, these become prophetic statements. James 5, verse 4. Interestingly, the first and only occurrence of the word gay in the Bible is in James chapter 2. And the implications of James chapter 2 is the ones wearing the gay apparel are the ones who are running the court systems. Now, James chapter 5 shows us how rich people in the tribulation, remember, James doctrinally is aimed at the tribulation, doctrinally speaking. Spiritually, we can get anything out of it. But doctrinally speaking, in the book of James, every rich person appears to be damned. Why? The only way you get rich in a tribulation, take the mark of the beast. You take the mark of the beast, of course, that means you're damned. Okay, James 5, verse 4. How did these rich guys, verse 1, it says, go to now, you rich men, weep and howl, for your misery shall come upon you. Your riches are corrupt, your garments are moth-eaten, your gold and silver is cankered. And the rust of them shall be a witness against you and shall eat your flesh as it were fire. Ye have heaped treasure together for the last days. Notice there's that phrase, last days, found 8 times in the Bible. Verse 4, for behold, the hire of the laborers who have reaped down your fields, which is of you, kept back by fraud. That's a Bible prophecy now. Okay, so that's how the United Nations gets tax structure. It's all fraud, every bit of it. Okay, and that's, you know, you name it, basically any government agency is doing that. Fraud. Okay, and that's a sign of judgment on our country. That's a sign of judgment on any nation. You see, God gives a nation, the people the kind of governing structures they deserve. And when you have the apostasy rampant in our country, we deserve every bit of this. Now, Nico, when he comes here, this is a step up spiritually for them, coming from Europe. But we're following the same footstep Europe's going. You know, as Israel followed Judah, or Judah followed Israel, we're following Europeans' actions. They're further ahead of us at this point. Okay, so verse 2, the revolters are profound to make slaughter, though I have a rebuker of them all. And now the rebuker here, I have the cross-reference going to Amos 5. And this has Amos rebuking in the street, in the gate, it says. Amos chapter 5. Remember, in the gate in the Bible is where public information is taking place, either to court structures or private or public business, marriages. Remember, that's where Boaz went to marry Ruth, in the gate. Remember, Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. He was some type of a judge. Okay, Amos chapter 5, verse 10. It says, they hate him that rebuketh in the gate. It's out there publicly. And they abhor him that speaketh uprightly. For as much, therefore, as your treading is upon the poor, that's who they take advantage of, the poor, they can't pay the attorney fees. And you take from him burdens of wheat, ye have built houses of hewn stone, but ye shall not dwell in them. Ye have planted pleasant vineyards, but ye shall not drink wine of them. For I know your manifold transgressions and your mighty sins. They afflict the just, they take a bribe, and they turn aside the poor in the gate from their right. Well, I got my rights. Don't count on it. Okay, and that's the idea of what he's saying here. Therefore, the prudent shall keep silence in that time. You have a right to remain silent. For it is an evil time. Seek good and not evil, that you may live, and so the Lord and the Lord of hosts shall be with you as ye have spoken. Hate the evil and love the good, and establish judgment in the gate. It may be that the Lord God of hosts will be gracious unto the remnant of Joseph. Okay, back in Hosea. Hosea 5, verse 3. He says, I know Ephraim, and Israel is not hid from me. Now here you can see Ephraim and Israel are split. They're not the same thing. Israel is not hid from me, for now, O Ephraim, thou committest whoredom, and Israel is defiled. Okay, it's whoredom, that's King James' only word. The street word is ho. Okay, verse 4, they will not frame their doings to turn unto their God. The common saying, I've been framed. Okay, they have not framed their doings to turn unto their God. They won't turn to God. For the spirit of whoredoms is in the midst of them, and they have not known the Lord. Notice now he throws in spiritual warfare. The spirit of whoredoms. Okay, when a man commits sin of his flesh, the more he commits the sin of the flesh, then a spirit comes in. And the spirit comes in and takes over a stronghold. And then that spirit can take over an area, a stronghold of an area. And then they can call in more devils and take this stronghold of an area. That's why for many years, even till today, you'll have masons who will construct buildings that attract spirits. See, that's why they were in the building making business. They can make these buildings in certain shapes, trapezoids. It was two Luciferians that laid out the streets of Washington, D.C. And you know, I often watch this for years. You would think a very conservative politician, and they would talk very conservative and appear very conservative, but then they go to Washington, D.C., and it seems like they'd cease to be conservative. It's a rare thing that they could stay conservative. They always seem to be really watered down and become a moderate or even a liberal. And I got wondering about that, and I'm pretty, you know, wondering if the peer pressure. But not only that, but it's the way the spirits are drawn there. Sneblin talks about the Mormon Tabernacle or Temple in Washington, D.C., that on the fifth floor of that tabernacle, they have the whole floor is laid out identical to the Oval Office. Because they believe someday that a Mormon ruler will rule this country from that place. And to be quite honest with you, I'm kind of hoping they're right. Yeah. Most likely connected with the Antichrist, and sooner the better. But there's spirits involved in those things, and those spirits really, a person doesn't understand spiritual warfare, you can get lethargy comes across you, you know, depression, oppression comes across you, and you can't, what's wrong with me? I just can't figure, what is wrong with me? Well, you got to cleanse yourself to blood. Verse 5, he says, and the pride of Israel doth testify to his face. Sin wears on people's faces, wears on their body. And boy, You see certain people, a certain, you know, the thing that I noticed when I was in Switzerland, is when I went to Austria, you know, stay with, when Jen and I went over there last, I think it was last April, was it last April? I think it was. I noticed, man, a lot of the Austrian women just, man, they just look like somebody's beat them up spiritually. You know, it's that witchcraft that they're under. I mean, you could just look in their face and their eyes, and you know that they'd probably be in their 20s, but in their eyes and their face, they look like they're in their 40s. I couldn't tell you how many times I'd be talking to guys in jail, and I'd be talking to these guys, and they'd look like they'd have 10 years on me, and I would have 10 years on them because of the life they're living. Hard, beat up. I mean, the world just beats you up, beats you to a pulp, and just leaves you lie there. And so this pride is going to be on their face. It's going to testify to their face. Therefore shall Israel and Ephraim fall in their iniquity. Judah also shall fall with them. He's going to throw a dart down south there to Judah. So you guys are going to fall too. Verse 6, they shall go with their flocks and with their herds to seek the Lord, but they shall not find him. Isaiah chapter 55, verse 6, it says, seek ye the Lord while he may be found. The implications are, is that you better seek God while you got a chance, because you may lose that chance. And the same goes in our country. We better use the liberties we have now and stand for them now while we have the chance. And if we don't stand for these things now, then we have nobody to blame but ourselves for losing them. Okay, and so they shall go with their flocks and with their herds to seek the Lord. Now, are they sincere in this matter? I really don't know. It doesn't say. But they shall not find him. If you look at another very sad passage, look in Amos chapter 8, verse 11. America is getting more and more like this, to find a Bible-believing church. You know, Brother Bill's not here tonight, but normally he's here driving 2.5 hours one way. I mean, and he'll come Sunday to here at 4, and then he'll drive down to Rensselaer and get it down there at 6. Then he heads back. I tell you, you got to respect somebody like that. He's been doing this for over 2 years now. He don't. Amos 8, verse 11, he says, behold, the days come, saith the Lord God, that I will send a famine in the land, not a famine of bread nor a thirst for water, but of hearing the words of God. And they shall wander from sea to sea and from north even to the east, and they shall run to and fro to seek the word of the Lord, and shall not find it. That's a sad time. It's getting more and more like that in our country. And so when God withdraws himself from a people, they can do nothing about it. Okay, so he says in verse 6, they go with their flocks and with their herds to seek the Lord, but they shall not find him. He hath withdrawn himself from them. Boy, that is a sad time. Judges, the cross-reference runs you to Judges 16, verse 20, where it says that the Spirit of the Lord departed from Samuel, and he did not know it. He didn't know it. And so the Lord has his time where he gets fed up. He gets fed up with people, and he says, okay, if you really don't want me around, see you later. And then when they call and they cry out, what is his response going to be? If you would, look in Proverbs chapter 1. I often thought that in a tribulation, the Lord will weep when he punishes his people Israel. Not when I read this verse. When God has heard the mocking of his name for years and years in the seminaries, and in the churches, and oh, this a better rendering is this, and this should have been translated this, and this is a very unfortunate rendering in the King James Bible. And then you go into the state schools, you know, do I have any Christian young people in here? You certainly aren't that, you know, archaic to be. You really believe God created? I mean, when God hears this mocking as he does, he's going to throw it back in their face. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 20. Wisdom crieth without, she uttereth her voice in the streets. She crieth in the chief place of concourse. There's an archaic word still in use today. You find that in airports. In opening of the gates. Oh, you find that in the airports. In the city, she uttered her words, saying, how long, ye simple ones, will ye love simplicity? And the scorners delight in their scorning, and fools hate knowledge. Turn you at my reproof. Behold, I will pour out my spirit unto you. I will make known my words unto you. Because I have called, and ye refused. I have stretched out my hand, and no man regarded. But ye have set at naught all my counsel with none of my reproof. I also will laugh at your calamity. I will mock when your fear cometh. When your fear cometh as desolation, and your destruction cometh as a whirlwind, when distress and anguish cometh upon you, then shall they call upon me, but I will not answer. They shall seek me early, but they shall not find me, for they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord. That's the attitude God is going to have in the tribulation toward the Jewish people. If you go to Isaiah 47, there's a woman there who's been going to the tea leaf readers and all the palm readers, you know, and reading her horoscope and all that stuff and trying to get all the answers. And when judgment comes down, God says, yeah, go read your horoscope. You know, can you imagine a lifer in prison reading his horoscope? You're going to find the love of your life today. Probably is. Probably a Roman priest. But I mean, can you imagine that though? In Isaiah 47, the Lord mocks that person there. Mocks it. Go run off to your palm reader. You know, the palm readers, they can't predict, you know, they're going to face bankruptcy someday. Now, this is a sadistic laughter, a mocking laughter that God has towards his people. He's been hearing that for years. He said, okay, he who laughs last, laughs best. And I'm getting the last laugh. Now, this laughter in Proverbs 1 is a laughter towards his people. Let's try Psalms 2 and see his laughter towards the United Nations and company. Psalms 2, verse 1, it says, why do the heathen rage and the people imagine a vain thing? The kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed, saying, let us break their bands asunder and cast away their cords from us. He that sitteth in the heavens shall laugh. The Lord shall have them in derision. God mocking them, making fun of them. So that's the one aimed at the lost, the unsaved. And the one in Proverbs 1 is aimed at the righteous or the Jews of the tribulation. And there's one more place, Deuteronomy chapter 28, verse 63. This is a sight of God you definitely don't want to see. Deuteronomy 28, verse 63. Much of Deuteronomy is not only history, it's got prophecy in there. And the reason why it's prophecy is men learn from history that they seldom learn from history. And if they don't learn from history, they're destined to repeat it. Okay, Deuteronomy 28, verse 63. And it shall come to pass that as the Lord rejoiced over you to do you good and to multiply you. Now that's easy to understand. God rejoicing about multiplying the Jews and Israel. But look at the next half. So the Lord will rejoice over you to destroy you and to bring you to naught. And you shall be plucked from off the land whither thou goest to possess it. And the Lord shall scatter thee among all people from one end of the earth even unto the other. Now there's where it's getting prophetic. Back in 606 would be he scattered them to Babylon. Basically one area. This is throughout the whole world. When Adolf Hitler got going, the Antichrist is going to make him look like a Sunday school picnic. Okay, and of course it's going to be the same church. You know, Hitler had a concordant with the Pope. What was it, Pope Pius the... What was he? The 12th. Pope Pius the 12th. Real pious fella. I think they bought the chemicals for the gassing chambers. I think one of the salesmen of that was Pope John Paul Jr. the 2nd. The last pope that they just stuck in the ground in a trapezoid casket. He's the one who was one of the salesmen of the chemicals, I think. Okay, Hosea 5, verse 7. Okay, when God withdraws himself from a person, there's nothing you and I can do about it except beg and beg and beg and beg and beg. Verse 7, they have dealt treacherously against the Lord, for they have begotten strange children. Now shall a month devour them with their portions. That month, I've got a cross-reference on that month, but that's, you know, just kind of a guess running where the time period he's going with. But notice the thing, they've begotten strange children. The Bible talks about a strange woman, which is a false church. And it also talks about strange flesh. And this is strange children. Now, a stranger, generally speaking in the Bible, a stranger is a foreigner or an alien or a heathen or a Gentile. That's all the words that aim our direction. Okay, when the Jews talk about, you know, a Gentile, of course, they refer to us as Gentile dogs. But Ephesians chapter 2 will call the Gentile a stranger. And in Ephesians 2:12 also uses the word alien. Okay, and then you've got a heathen and a Gentile. Those are all synonymous terms in the Bible. Now, of course, an alien, we use that term as far as flesh and blood goes, you know, with foreigner coming in. But there's another crowd that uses an alien too. And this is dealing with strange children. Now, are these people here, these strange children, are they Gentiles or is this something else? You know, I'm not saying, I don't really know. But if you would, go to Jude 6 and 7, and we'll see some strange flesh. You know, I'm up to thinking here the last year or so that when Jesus Christ said in John 8:44 about the scribes and Pharisees, ye are of your father the devil, for years, you know, I took that as, you know, spiritually speaking, but I'm now at the point where I'm saying that's probably literal. Meaning the devil or fallen angels, Genesis 6, having relations with women, producing strange flesh, unusual type of flesh. This is what was going on in Sodom and Gomorrah. Verse 6 of Jude, it says, and the angels which kept not their first estate, okay, the first estate of angels are spirits, but left their own habitation, he hath reserved in everlasting chains under darkness, under the judgment of the great day, even as Sodom and Gomorrah, and the cities about them in like manner, giving themselves over to fornication and going after strange flesh, are set forth for an example, suffering the vengeance of eternal fire. Now, the Sodomites and the Gomorrah people are Gentiles. Why would he say Gentiles are going after strange flesh when they're already considered strangers? This is something more strange than the strangers. This is dealing with a real perverted situation. And you're getting Americans talking about this stuff now. And of course, Hollywood has been gearing people up for this. Back in the 60s, remember Bewitched? Where you have a witch marrying a mortal, and then they have a child that's a witch. Then you have your friend Martian, back in those days, my friend Martian. Now they're getting more and more obvious with these things. Okay, and the reason why is pagans are waiting for the gods to come down and walk amongst us. Acts chapter 14, remember that's what they thought Paul and Silas were. The gods have come down and walked amongst us. So pagan mythology, Greek mythology, and all this pagan stuff in the past is talking about beings having relations with humans, crossing them, and so you have an extra being, and they're trying to get eternal life. From the crossing of an animal with a man or a woman with an alien. And that's a lot what's going on down in Area 51. And they're always dealing, you know, that's why in Nevada they have such a problem with missing cattle, Nevada and New Mexico, that when that cattle come up missing, they just got to go report it, and then they get some funds kicked back to them for the missing cattle. And some of these cattle, they're sucking blood out of them where they look like a raisin when they're done. And it's all part of this real evil, really dark side stuff. Friends in high places, and it's dealing with, and when you're dealing with this conspiracy things, and you know, conspiracy, the Bible teaches conspiracy. I mean, that word is used over and over throughout the Bible. And then if you study about the lost city of Atlantis, the so-called lost city of Atlantis, and then what do we have? The Atlantic Ocean. And then we have an Atlas. You see, and all these things are pagan things, and it's a devil's way of getting worship away from God. And so these, whoever worships the devil the best gets more world power. That's what he offered Jesus in one of the temptations. If you bow down and worship me, I'll give you these kingdoms. So who's running the kingdoms? Somebody that's had an agreement with Satan along the line somewhere. Okay, and so when he's dealing with strange children here, you're dealing with the end of the age of Israel, and what were those kings doing in those times? They were given child sacrifices. Who were they sacrificing the children to? To devils. What were the devils expecting from them? Fornication. You see, and that's what's going on. And you can see right where America's heading in this stuff. And this is really wild stuff, far out stuff. But you see, this is getting geared up for the tribulation, where the tribulation time period, they're going to have devils walking the earth worldwide. And not only that, but angels worldwide. Because Hebrews 13 mentions that if you entertain strangers unawares, some have entertained angels. Okay, so verse 7, strange children. Verse 8, blow ye the cornet in Gibeah, the trumpet in Ramah, cry aloud at Bethaven after thee, O Benjamin. Public notices, public declarations. Ephraim shall be desolate in the day of rebuke. Okay, and that was about 65 years, if it's a contemporary with Isaiah. And Ephraim is desolate. The word desolate runs you back to Isaiah 7:8, the cross-reference. Ephraim shall be desolate in a day of rebuke. Among the tribes of Israel have I made known that which shall surely be. The princes of Judah were like them that remove the bound. Remove the bound or boundary. Okay, removing the boundary or removing the landmarks. Okay, that is a curse. I have cross-referenced Deuteronomy chapter 19, 14. Moving the boundaries. So you're going to find in many of our states, the state boundaries have been removed. And what they're doing is they're trying to divide our country up in 10 regions. And they've already done this through the zip code and through the Federal Reserve System. And they're trying to remove the distinctions of the boundaries of the states. Now, so far, Indiana still has retained their boundaries. Okay, but these things are things on the books. And they're removing these things, or trying to, which legally they cannot remove them, but they are still doing it. behind the book. For example, we have two mail-carrying systems in America, more than two, not counting United UPS or FedEx. You have a post office and the postal service. It costs you 39 cents now to send a letter, 1 ounce letter, through the postal service. But you can send it through the post office for 2 cents. That's still in the books. You just got a stamp at the top right, post office, you know, first class, top left, bottom left. Okay, I've done this on a few occasions. Not too often, but I have done on a few occasions. Sometimes I pay the phone bill that way because it's already addressed there. Now, the Supreme Court has said this. I have two cases that the Supreme Court has said this, that they said the Postal Act of 1970-something has eliminated the post office. That's not true. They can't do that. That is a constitutional position, the post office. But you see, what they've done is they laid a counterfeit beside the real post office, postal service. Pretty slick how they do that, isn't it? Now, they've done that in almost every area of life. You have a bill of sale for your car. You have a certificate of title. That's what it says on it, certificate of title. Doesn't say title. It says certificate of title. That's like a picture of a banana. Okay? This is how they do everything. This is the fraud that's being taken place. You say, what do you do about it? I don't know what to do about it. You try to find a battle somewhere and pick one. You're not going to fight all of them. If you start fighting all of them, you're going to miss the whole picture and not preach the gospel. That's the most important thing. This book is more important than any laws we got in this country. Preaching what this book says, we got to get back to what gives our nation strength, and that's preaching this book. And then maybe as a hobby, say stuff on the other side. Okay, Deuteronomy chapter 19, verse 14, it says, thou shalt not remove thy neighbor's landmark. See, now that's the only cross-reference I have there in Hosea because you can't put them all in there. So if go to Deuteronomy 19, 14 at the letter J, then you got three or four others going into Proverbs. Okay, now we know what removing one's landmark is when you're dealing with surveying. Okay, but this is dealing with our national landmarks. Okay, and so the Constitution, things like that, those are national things. Okay, and so when somebody's trying to remove those things from us, they're removing the boundaries that we have. See, Australia is starting to wake up about this stuff. Australia has made public announcements saying to the Muslims, if you want Sharia law in Australia, forget it. If you're looking for a nation to have Sharia law, leave. And if we catch you trying to enforce Sharia law, we're going to boot you out. Now, if America don't wake up, that's where we're heading. Okay, the princes of Judah were like them that removed the bound or boundary. Therefore, I will pour out my wrath upon them like water. God watches the business structures. A lot of times people think, well, my business affairs, one thing. That is holy ground. In Old Testament and New Testament, where God gives some of the regulations on holiness, Old Testament, Leviticus 19, New Testament, 1 Thessalonians 4, in both places, he mentions our business adventures, our working abilities, our careers, our jobs. Both places, that's holy. That's holy ground, what we do in those areas. Okay, Hosea 5, verse 11. Ephraim is oppressed and broken in judgment because he willingly walked after the commandment. What commandment, though? God's commandment? If he's oppressed, he's walking after, you know, God's oppressing him. He's walking after the wrong commandment, his made-up ones. Therefore will I be unto Ephraim as a moth and to the house of Judah as rottenness. When Ephraim saw his sickness, okay, at that cross-reference, you go to Isaiah 1, which is, remember, contemporary. And Isaiah said, the whole nation is sick from the head down to the foot. That's where we have the common saying, they're sick in the head. Brother Roloff used to say, America's an insane asylum run by the inmates. And boy, he's so right on that. Okay, so when Ephraim saw his sickness and Judah saw his wound, then went Ephraim to the Assyrian. Wrong place to go. The Assyrian is in typology the Antichrist. When everything falls apart, who are they going to run to? They're going to run to the man who fixes it, the Antichrist. It's going to be a temporary fix. And sent to King Jerob. Now, this guy's a doctrinal picture of the Antichrist. Yet could he not heal you, nor cure you of your wound. For I will be unto Ephraim as a lion, and as a young lion to the house of Judah. I, even I, will tear and go away, I will take away, and none shall rescue him. Okay, so this wound that they're getting healed from, it's going to be, you know, it's like the old saying, I think when Clinton was running for office, it's the economy, stupid. That's what people care about. And of course, they'll get fiat money worldwide, cashless society, and they're going to have worldwide prosperity, buying and selling and marrying and giving in marriage. That's when the Son of Man comes. It's going to be all facade. Verse 15, I will go and return to my place till they acknowledge their offense and seek my face. In their affliction, they shall seek me early. So obviously, I will go, typology, going to heaven, going to stay there, return to my place, you know, going to stay in heaven. And when they seek his face at the end of the tribulation, then the Lord will come back, you know, and set up his kingdom. You know, people who believe in post-millennialism, they really are not dealing with a full deck. If you read history, all ages end in catastrophe. Everything falls apart, and the Lord has to come in and fix it. That's the way it always is, the way it always will be, until the Lord takes the final slam against death and everything and the devil and throws them into hell and blows up this place and starts a new heaven and new earth. And that's when everything's going to be hunky-dory. Looking forward to that day. The sooner the better. Okay, that's chapter 5. Any questions or comments? What we covered?